Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns next Sunday. The Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA is an open admission, no-kill animal shelter and welfare organization whose mission is to advance the compassionate treatment of animals. The shelter provides medical care and behavioral services for dogs and cats, promoting permanent, caring homes and further education and outreach. The CASPCA also provides contractual pound services to the City of Charlottesville and Albemarle County, ensuring that all healthy and treatable animals are placed into loving homes. According to their website, in the past decade, the CASPCA has adopted out more than 36,000 animals, reunited over 7,000 lost pets with their owners, and spayed or neutered more than 65,000 animals. In our studio to talk about the organization are Angie Gunter. Angie is the executive director of the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. She has been a passionate member of the CASPCA team for more than 4 years, serving as a volunteer, board member, then development director. Under her leadership, the shelter has increased community-wide support and forged new partnerships for the greater good of all animals in our community. Prior to joining the CASPCA, Angie served in corporate leadership positions for over 14 years. She has been an active member of the Charlottesville community since 2005. She currently has 4 dogs and 2 rabbits, which she adopted from the shelter. In her role as executive director, Angie oversees the day-to-day operations of the CASPCA, including animal care, animal intake, adoptions, donor relations, education, training and counseling programs for pet owners, as well as management of pound services for the City of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Joining Angie this morning are 2 shelter volunteers, Tara Wood. Tara is an experienced dog walker and has been a volunteer with the shelter since 2010, and Steve Stearns. Steve is an experienced cat socializer and has been a volunteer with the shelter since February 2013. Good morning to you all.
Good morning.
Well, that was a very hearty beginning to our program. Angie, I'd like to begin with you. I think there's some confusion in the community as to what the difference is between a shelter and a pound. I was wondering if you could clarify that for us.
Sure. So, first of all, I would try to think of it in terms of private versus public. Private being the shelter, and public being the pound. So many municipalities now use interchangeably pound and shelter. So we serve both roles. First of all, the CASPCA is defined by Virginia Code as a private animal shelter whose purpose is finding permanent adoptive homes for animals. So that's the part that we control. Then we also serve as the pound for the City of Charlottesville and Albemarle County through contracted services. So every municipality is required to have a pound. So essentially we're one building, but if you think about it in terms of it could be 2 separate buildings because we're doing 2 separate things really, but all caring for animals. That's the best way I think I can explain it. This question comes up quite a bit, and we always try to keep information out there to help people understand.
So is the shelter divided into 2 different sections, sheltered animals and one for the pound?
So the pound, it's again, one building, but there are separate areas for pound animals where pound animals are held until they're available for adoption, and then they're moved to the adoptable side.
Tara and Steve, you bill yourselves as animal socializers. What are animal socializers? Steve, you can go first.
Okay. I am an experienced cat socializer. I got that by basically spending lots of time with cats. I've always loved both dogs and cats, and I've had both throughout my life. But when I retired about 5.5 years ago, I came to the shelter, immediately started working with cats. And what we find is that many cats are shy, reclusive, they don't show well. And our goal as a cat socializer is to gain the trust of a cat, of all the cats, to make them comfortable with potential adopters who visit the shelter.
Now, as a cat layperson, I'm under the impression that you can't train a cat to do anything. Is that true?
I would disagree with that. It's difficult, and cats are solitary animals, but they make wonderful companions. And once you gain the trust of a cat, that cat will work with you, will interact with you in just fantastic ways.
And on the dog side, Tara, how do you become an experienced dog walker?
Well, you start by walking dogs and spending lots and lots of time with them. And then if you're like me, you get interested in the dogs that don't show well, the dogs that are scared, the dogs that are hyper, and you try to connect with them and try to find out why they are scared. Do they need more exercise? Do they need more stimulation? And try to provide those things for them.
And are some animals, I'm going to ask this of both of you, are some animals more difficult to socialize than others? I guess it depends on their background. Is that right?
Yes, it depends on their background. And a lot of times, especially coming from strays, we don't know what that is. So there's a lot of guesswork. But it also depends on individuals. Every animal has, at least in my experience, a different resiliency, just like people. And some can come back from amazing, amazing hardships.
Steve, for cats?
Probably the majority of the cats that we get into the shelter want to interact with people, but some of them are shy. But the ones that I really like working with are the ones that I put in quotes as being difficult cats. I remember Spencer, who would rub against your leg, wanting attention. You'd reach down to pet him, and he would whack you. He would then rub against your leg again.
It's a setup.
It's a setup, exactly. Yet, while Spencer was at the shelter for over a year, we got this wonderful report. Some brave individual finally adopted him, and within a week, we got a picture of Spencer lying on this man's bed with him, and Spencer was the greatest cat ever. He once out of the shelter, he changed, and he was just great.
Question for both of you. Is it hard? I mean, it must be bittersweet to see these animals, some of these animals adopted after you've worked with them for so long and got to know them and bonded with them. Is that hard? Is it hard? I mean, I know you want to see them adopted, but is it hard to see some animals go?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Steve?
I guess I've philosophically approached this. I rejoice whenever these cats get adopted. We work with them for a long time. I've got a couple of cats right now that have been at the shelter for over a year. We had a cat 2 weeks ago that had been there for more than a year, and she was adopted, and everybody just was flipping with joy. Because we're knowing we interact with the adopters and we understand, or we reach the conclusion that this is a good home for this animal. So this is great.
That's great. And in the final segment of our program today, we're going to come back to some success stories and some fun stories from your work. So kind of keep that in your mind as we go along. Angie, I want to talk a little bit about fostering now. I guess my first question is, can a no-kill shelter even function without a fostering community?
So I can't speak for every shelter. I mean, I would find it difficult for a shelter to be able to be no-kill without fosters. I know we certainly could not be no-kill without our fosters. It would be nearly impossible. It would be impossible.
Right. So what kind of animals are candidates for fostering?
So kittens and puppies are candidates before they're ready to be available. Some that are awaiting medical treatment. Other candidates could be recovering from a surgery. In fact, we've got a couple right now that we're looking for fosters for dogs who are recovering from surgeries. Nursing mothers, any animal recovering from any animal recovering from an illness potentially. Also, when we're transferring more animals in, so what we're looking at is some of our long-timers, trying to get them into homes so they can get better acclimated, and then transferring others in that can be adopted more quickly. But right now, we're really expanding our foster program to include day trips for dogs, for example, where they just get out of the shelter for a day and go for a hike, or weekends, overnights, just anything to get some of our long-timers out.
CASPCA Executive Director Angie Gunter, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns in our studio this morning. We're talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Have any of you three fostered animals?
I have not fostered, but I have adopted.
All right. And Tara, you fostered?
Some cats, actually.
Oh, some cats. I see.
Yes.
And Angie?
Oh, yes. I have three foster failures right now. So I'm a foster failure. I'm not the ideal foster because I keep them all.
Explain what a foster failure is.
So it's when you intend to foster an animal. In one case, I was taking care of a dog that had had a surgery, and the intention was to bring her back so she could be adopted. Well, I adopted her. I have a dog right now that I'm fostering. And I'm also going to adopt. I get too attached. I can't let them go. So I am a foster failure.
Fostering's not for everybody. It's very helpful.
Yes.
But it's not just dogs and cats, is it? We've been talking about dogs and cats, but it's not just dogs and cats, is it?
It's not, but we really like to focus on the companion animals, the dogs and cats. We do get gerbils, hamsters, mice, rabbits, guinea pigs. We have a ferret right now at the shelter, so we do get other small animals.
And what would you say is the most unusual animal that's coming to the shelter?
So not during my time, but what I hear from staff is they had a seagull, Jonathan the seagull, back in 2007, and the staff really became attached to Jonathan the seagull. So that's the most unusual that I've heard of so far.
And how are these animals named? Every animal in the shelter has a name, right?
Yeah, when they go through intake, it's really the clinic staff that comes up with these names when they take them in. So that's...
I donated a baby name book to them, but I don't know if they use it or not.
And there's lots of pop culture that shows up.
Yes, yes. I've seen some of your dog names, like Sarah Jessica Barker. And
Yes. Oh, I remember Sarah Jessica. Good memory.
I want to talk a little bit about giving up your pet, the so-called owner-surrendered animals. I think a lot of people think they have a pet, they're tired of it, take it to the shelter, but that's not really what you're there for, is it?
It's not. We really want to counsel people to keep their pets and do what we can to help them help the pet stay in the home. And that's something for next year that I'm going to be doing a lot of work on with retention for animals, and we want to be able to provide things that allow the pet to stay in the home.
And you only accept pets locally, is that right? You don't take pets, owner surrenders.
That's our pound services. So that's right. An example of pound services that we're contracted to provide for the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. But we do transfer animals in from other localities. In fact, we also oversee the veterinary services for Louisa County. We provide that contracted service as well. So we end up with some animals from them also.
And I understand that you have some programs in place to help people hang on to their pets, like the Pet Food Assistance Program. Can you talk about that a little bit?
So that's the Pet Food Assistance is, you know, if someone comes in and that's, again, one of the issues, then we try to work with folks to provide food for a temporary amount of time. So we do have also compassionate care clinics for low-income families, and we're offering those three times a year. They are going to increase next year. So again, we're going to be doing more next year to increase these services. We provide spay-neuter services for low-income, again, microchip to try and keep the pet from running away. But sure, I mean, if they do get lost, they're easy to be redeemed. But we are looking to expand that, especially in behavior services as well.
And if a listener wanted to apply for the Pet Food Assistance Program, it's temporary, I understand. Is that right?
It is temporary right now.
And how does one go about applying for that?
They would just reach out to info@CASPCA via email, or you could just call our shelter, and one of the adoption counselors will work with you.
And what about spaying and neuter assistance?
So we already have on our website for low-income families, there's a price difference. But again, reach out to info via email or just make a phone call. And it's individualized working with folks.
Right. And does spaying or neutering have behavioral consequences for the animals? Does it help them calm down in the home? For, I mean, like, say, someone who has an animal that's just, they can't manage, does spaying neuter help with that at all?
You know, I'm not a veterinarian. I wouldn't say necessarily. It helps in some cases, but I don't think, I wouldn't look to spay neuter. You think so, Steve?
I would suggest that it makes a significant difference in a male cat. Male cats are highly prone to spraying, whereas once they have been neutered, it's very unusual for that to happen.
That's a very good point.
But you also spay and neuter every animal that comes to the shelter.
We do.
Not to the pound, but to the shelter.
And once they're in the pound and they become available to us, we do spay or neuter.
Spay or neuter them.
Right. But that's only when they become our property.
Right. And you chip them as well at that
point.
Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So if these animals get lost or become strays again,
correct,
they can be identified. Now, does that extend over just our county and city, or can they be identified if they show up in another state? Or
if they show up anywhere, they can be identified as long as someone has the microchip scanner. I mean, right, we had a cat that was brought to our shelter that came from a shelter in Florida last year that we ended up giving. That shelter wanted the cat back when we called. They arranged transportation to come get the cat so they could find the owner.
Right. And I assume that most shelters and veterinarians have these scanners. So
absolutely.
If you find
yes.
Right. So if you find, but here in town, if you find an animal that you can't otherwise identify, could they bring it to the shelter and have it scanned?
Absolutely.
To see if they can find you can find the owner?
Yes. And some folks choose to hold the animal and look for the owner. And most often, though, we take that animal in most cases.
Right. Want to talk, you do a lot to help animals. I want to talk for a moment about what you do to help adults. And I'm thinking of the beginner family dog class that you offer. How does that work?
So, Tara, you could probably speak more to our dog training classes, do you think? Or no? Okay. Sorry, I thought you participated in the classes, but we do offer.
I work with an outside trainer.
Okay. So we offer training classes at the shelter. You just go online to sign up. It's puppy classes, dog classes. Unfortunately, we don't offer any cat training classes, Steve.
Although I have witnessed cat clicker training.
That's right.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, cats respond to what is,
yes,
first of all,
of course,
for our
yeah
listeners, what is clicker training quickly?
Quickly. Well, a treat-based training provides that you get the treat to the animal in a timely manner, which most people, it's difficult to do. So the click provides a marker saying, yes, that's what I wanted you to do. The treat is coming.
Right.
It's commonly used for dogs. I believe it was developed with dolphins. Because they were jumping in the air, and you can't throw fish in the air. At least I know I wouldn't be able to hit that. So they started using the clicker. And it's most commonly used with dogs. You can use it with cats, too. A little bit different vibe with that, but I've seen it used. We use a pen.
All right. And Steve, you said you did some clicker. You do some clicker training as
I
well?
I personally have not done clicker training, but I have observed it.
Oh, right.
And it is, as Tara says, you're basically letting the cat know or the animal know that the treat is coming as a positive response to something that the animal did.
And do you recommend clicker training for people at home that are trying to train their pets?
Yes, with some guidance, because it can be a little bit confusing, and it took me years to really get the timing down, but it can clarify things for an animal that is otherwise confused about what the person want, what behavior is preferable.
Right. And back to you, Angie, just to finish this discussion of the helping adults, the family dog classes. Does the dog have to be of a certain age to qualify? You take puppies in the program?
We do. They should be over the age of 5 months and all need to be up to date on vaccinations, including rabies.
Right. And you charge for this service,
we
right?
do. This is,
how
$100,
much is it?
$125 per dog, or $100 if the dog has been adopted from the SPCA.
SPCA Executive Director Angie Gunter, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns in our studio this morning. We're talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. After the break, the Kennel Renovation Project. It's a really big deal. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. Back in the studio with Angie Gunter, Tara Wood, and Steve Stearns talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. I want to move on to the caravan. Now, I'm going to spell that for our listeners. It's C-A-R-E-A-V-A-N, caravan. And the Charlottesville, this is a fairly new project for you. Is that right, Angie?
Correct. It arrived last year. I believe it was in June that we actually had the caravan delivered.
How did you fund it?
So it was through a challenge grant. It was made possible through a challenge grant by the Perry Foundation for $73,500. And then the other half of the money was raised by generous donors in our community.
So let's talk about the van and what it can do. I understand that it helps in providing care to mm-hmm. animals that are not necessarily in the shelter. Is that right?
Correct. So we can go to other areas in the community, and we have not actually started this part of taking the van out. We've been so busy with transports that we haven't gone out into areas in the community yet. We are going to be doing that next year, setting up particularly low-income areas and going out and trying to provide just basic pet care. We can't actually do surgery in the caravan, so oftentimes it's just transporting animals back to our shelter for things like dentals or spay neuters.
Will you be able to do surgery at some day in the future? Is that a goal?
This particular van, it's impossible to do surgery in this particular unit.
Right. So it's largely for transporting animals back and forth.
It really is. Transporting animals. You could do vaccinations, for example, microchip, just basic wound care, but not surgery.
Will you go out into the community and gather up animals to bring them back to the shelter for people?
So I think what we envision doing is right now we have compassionate care clinics where folks come to the shelter for basic wellness exams for their pets if they're low income and they show proof of public assistance. So this, in essence, we could do what we're doing now. We could do that much in communities. We're not doing that at the moment. We're really busy right now, and we've got to be staffed appropriately to go out into the community and provide that service. We are providing it in the shelter, though.
Right, and I understand you also use the van to help nearby shelters that aren't no-kill shelters,
correct?
Like your own, to save animals that otherwise would have to be euthanized.
That is correct.
And
in fact, 23% of our population right now is from animals at shelters that would have been euthanized due to space.
And how far away are those shelters? Are they fairly close?
So right now, the two shelters we're working with, I would say the most, is Buckingham and Farmville.
Uh-huh.
And that is actually through a grant that we've received from Best Friends Animal Society to try and help those two organizations out. We help anyone really that's in need. We do a lot with Louisa. As I mentioned, we are contracted to provide veterinary services for them. So we go there once a week. And that's an example right. where animals are transferred back for procedures.
Right.
Just really all over. And we also go out of state. And we have used this for the hurricane season last year. We brought animals back.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that. You provided hurricane relief for animals for all three of Harvey, Irma, and Maria.
That is correct.
Hurricanes. Tell us how that works out. It's a long journey in the van.
Oh gosh, that was a really long journey. The staff was so excited though. So the first one was Harvey in Houston, and I was contacted by a couple of national organizations to see if we could provide assistance. Most organizations do not have a caravan like we do. It's a nice thing that we have, and it's wonderful we're able to help. So I had staff that drove down to Houston to transport animals back. I also had staff travel to Atlanta for Irma and transport animals back. We actually transported 183 total for those three hurricanes.
Wow. And when the van comes back, I'm going to throw this back to Tara and Steve for a minute. When the van comes in with a load of animals, it must be kind of mayhem in the socializing department. How do you handle an influx suddenly of, well, you said 183 from
three. That was total. That was
from three storms. So
yeah.
What, maybe 50 a storm, something like that?
So it was about 50 a storm. It would be an average.
Uh-huh.
That's a good average.
Uh-huh. So how do you suddenly handle 50 new dogs? Are you recovering cats and dogs?
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. In fact, with Hurricane, it was Irma, right, in Atlanta, mm-hmm. that we just cleared out their entire cat population. So it was mainly cats we brought back.
So, Steve, the van arrives, 50 new cats or 25 new cats, whatever. What happens? Is it just all heck break loose in Cat City there in the shelter? Or?
There's excitement. yes, but when the van arrives back, primarily it is the staff that's initially interacting with the cats that came from Atlanta. They have to be their physical condition has to be checked. And in essence, I believe they're treated as strays at that point.
Absolutely.
And there are regulations in place as to what you can do with a stray. So I, as a cat volunteer, generally I will visit them occasionally, but in general, I don't see these cats until they become available for adoption.
Right.
And that's going to be with a normal stray. That's going to be a minimum of 6 days, so that they are going to be brought in. They're going to be calmed down. They are going to be examined by the clinical staff. If they are deemed healthy, they will be given shots, they will be microchipped, they will be treated for fleas and ticks and other parasites. And then after that 6-day period, if they are healthy, they become available for adoption and they are moved to those areas within the shelter where adoptable cats are housed. And at that point, I will start working with them. The best example that I can think of right now, because I've still got her, is Gracie. When Gracie arrived, she arrived with her sister, and they were housed together, and they didn't get along very well. But her sister was very quickly adopted. When I met Gracie, she wouldn't let me touch her. So we have worked with Gracie for literally over a year. She is a wonderful cat now. She hated other cats initially. Yesterday, I was at the shelter. I let Gracie out and 17 other cats. And so she interacted with 17 other cats, and she was a perfectly peaceful little girl. On Monday, I sat with her on a bench, and she curled up next to me and purred away. And she is a beautiful cat, and I would urge anyone that's looking for a great little cat to come visit Gracie.
All right. And a similar story on the dog side, Tara?
Well, Steve's right. Mostly the staff interacts with the animals when they first come in. And I believe most of those, if not all of those, are strays from
with the hurricanes
the shelters.
They were. When we're just doing regular transports and taking ownership, they are automatically ours, where as soon as they are cleared medically.
Right, but we weren't taking people's lost pets. In other words, we were clearing the shelters for them to be able to take in people's lost pets, and
yeah, that's exactly what we did.
And in preparation for this, we had cleared the shelters on our side so that people would come and adopt our dogs and our cats, so that we could take as a ripple effect, a domino effect.
And strategically, we always try to do that if we know we're going to have an influx of animals, then we're trying to move as many out, and we make sure we move as many out as we can.
And that is a place where I can help as a dog volunteer, because I know the dogs that have been in our care, and so I can talk to potential adopters about what might fit best in their home.
Right.
And then we can take in new dogs and start all over again.
Right, exactly.
And I think probably the most challenging of all those transports during the hurricane season, what I'm most proud of, is we were contacted again by best friends, because they had 25 dogs remaining in Houston and they could not find placement of anyone that would take the dogs because they had ringworm and heartworm. Well, ringworm was the reason they couldn't find placement, which is highly contagious. But our staff really stepped up to the occasion. They're wonderful at managing disease, and ringworm is so treatable. All of those dogs have been adopted. These dogs would have all been euthanized because there was no place for them to go, and that's heartbreaking to me.
CASPCA Executive Director Angie Gunter, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns, are in our studio this morning. We're talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I want to move on to the kennel makeover. Big project.
Yes.
Going to tear up the place and make it new.
We are tearing up the place as we speak.
So the kennels that are there now, are they original to the building when you moved to this new location?
To this location.
Mm-hmm. I say new, but
It is new.
It's 10 years, but it's newer than what you had in 1930.
Correct. That's exactly right.
So
it was designed, though, prior to us becoming no-kill and built in 2006. So it wasn't built with the no-kill vision in mind.
So what's the impetus to renovate the shelters? Why?
Well, that's what, you know, because this shelter was built prior to us, you know, realizing our no-kill mission, it wasn't designed for animals to have a length of stay that was very high. It was designed, frankly, for animals to stay a very short period of time, which means euthanasia if they don't get adopted quickly. So this, and it also just doesn't, so it's not designed for animals with serious health problems or behavior issues to stay for any length of time. So really, we're just trying to create something, a space where animals can stay longer and be in a more comfortable environment.
And I understand that you're also expanding the veterinarian services as well in this renovation? No?
Not in this renovation. Well, that will be with the expansion portion. And the renovation will be complete. Right now, we're just starting with kennel renovations, which hopefully will be completed by January of 2019 is the hope. So the clinic expansion would come later. And this all started before me, frankly, when this was discussed in 2014, was through a donor that was very passionate about expanding the facility. So that's after phase one is complete, we're going to regroup and determine how to move forward with the other phases.
Now, your website says that the renovation will help increase the social interaction of animals, I think. Is that mostly dogs that we're talking about? Because
We're talking about dogs because of that. It's just the kennel renovations. Yeah.
So how does the renovation increase the social interaction of the animals?
So the space is better for the dogs. So for instance, the door is a glass door, and we don't have the ability, like right now, someone can walk by, anyone from the public, and put their fingers through the cages, and then a dog bites, and you end up with a dog on bite quarantine.
Thinking it's a treat.
Oh,
not
of course.
Aggressively.
Right, not aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Tara, for clarifying.
Yes. But that does happen more often than you might think, or definitely more often than we would like. And people are okay, and they're very understanding about it, and we really appreciate that. But anytime an animal draws blood, whether it's by accident or not, we're required by law to put them on bite quarantine. And that sets an animal back socially, behaviorally, and they're not adoptable during that time. So it really is a detriment to the animal, even though people have been very gracious about and understanding about these little accidents.
And so one other example is we used to we still do right now, except for the side that's been complete, you would have to put tarps over the front of the kennels if a dog was really upset. They don't want to be stared at necessarily by the public, and there's no way to get away from someone just staring. So now there's what's called RFP. There's a place where the dog can literally hide behind if he or she doesn't want to be seen, doesn't want to be viewed. So
now they have a choice. They can stand to the glass if they want to watch, if that makes them more comfortable, which for some scared dogs it does. They want to keep a watch on things, or they can hide. So
I see.
It's personal preference.
Right. So the glass, you can see through the glass, but then there's an opaque panel to its left or right where the animal can hide behind.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
Wow. Are the kennels the same size as the old?
They are the same size.
And if someone wants to redesign a kennel, how do you go about doing that? You don't go to Amazon.com
and
say,
so this has been a very thoughtful process.
How do you do it?
We've hired an architect. An architect was hired, again, back in 2014. We have a contractor, and we also even have an owner's representative that looks over everything to make sure all things are moving along as planned.
And the architect specialized in shelter design.
Yes.
Oh, right. So, and did you have an opportunity to see what his work looked like before he came and tore up your shelter? Or
I think others went and looked.
I see.
At some of his work.
Okay. Just very briefly, funding. This is a very expensive renovation,
yes.
I assume.
No,
talk about
extremely.
Talk about how you funded it.
So for this particular piece of it with the renovation, it was from a generous bequest that was designated to go specifically for this. So this really has opened our eyes, which we knew, but how important estates and bequests are to the organization, to moving the organization forward. So we were very fortunate that there was someone who designated it specifically for this. We're still going to have to do some fundraising, which we haven't started yet, but we will be fundraising around this initiative as well.
Right. Now, I stumbled on the expansion project a minute ago. What can you tell me about that? It's been in the news. Back in April, Albemarle County Planning Commission talked about it. It's 12,000 square feet, roughly.
That's correct. We have been approved by the city and county to expand. We talked about it being four stages. Now it's five stages. But again, what we're really going to do is once this first stage is complete, is the board is going to regroup and make sure that we are moving forward the way we need to for the other stages, because this was initially brought up in 2014. So we just want to revisit and make sure we've got it exactly as we want it. I mean, since I've come on board, one of the things that's been added to it initially, again, it was four stages, now it's five, is an actual behavior training facility. So we're not sure which stage will come next. It's going to depend on our most immediate needs.
And what's the long-term plan for that 12,000 square feet? I mentioned veterinarian services.
Absolutely.
That's a part of it. And you just mentioned the other.
Absolutely.
Is there anything else in the plan? 12,000 square feet is a fair amount of space.
It is. So the cats would be housed separately from the dogs. They wouldn't have to see each other.
Right.
So that would be different. Really, it's just that's the biggest piece of it, separating the cats and dogs. So that ends up being more space for both, so you're housing more animals at that point. It's also building a bigger veterinary clinic. As it stands right now, it's building a bigger veterinary clinic. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to be doing, though, moving forward. We're still looking into exact plans.
And whereabouts in the physical shelter is this space going to be added? At the back, at the side? Still don't know yet? Still thinking about that?
Still thinking about it.
Uh-huh. But do you have enough land?
We do have enough land.
To do that?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's great. CASPCA Executive Director Angie Gunter, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns in our studio this morning. We're talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stream us live online at 947wpvc.org or on your mobile device via TuneIn. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with Angie Gunter, Tara Wood, and Steve Stearns talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. I want to talk a little bit about funding. It must be expensive to run. This is a big operation.
It's a big operation.
How many staff do you have?
70 staff. If we're fully staffed, it's 70.
70 people. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of salaries. And, of course, you've got animal food, you've got keeping your space air conditioned. I assume the shelters, all the kennels, everything's air conditioned.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's about a $3.5 million annual operating budget.
Right. So you have a number of ways to fund the shelter. Let's start with membership.
Yes, we have a membership program. There's varying levels. The top level is over 1,000, and that's what we consider to be our major donors. Every level, you get little perks, whether it be, you always have a membership card, you get 10% off the SPCA rummage store that we have here.
Wow.
That's also one of our nice revenue generators and a way to help us. So there's just varying levels, and you just get to be part of a life-saving group and be, part of what we're doing.
Great. How about adopt a kennel?
So we do offer adopt a kennel. We're going to be revamping that program since we have new kennels. So we're hoping that to really have more adopt a kennels.
And the Bow Wow Walk?
Bow Wow Walk. Our two major fundraisers are Bow Wow Walk, that's held in the spring, and then our upcoming Critter Ball is our largest fundraiser. That's going to be on September the 27th.
And talk about your Amazon wish list.
So we would love folks to visit our website and look at the list is always changing for the items we need, but we have a list of much needed items and you can order through Amazon.
And what kind of things are on that list?
So there could be crates, Kongs, various items, blankets. It changes. It really does change.
So if someone goes to Amazon, if they get this link from your website.
Yeah. And there's actually a list. We always keep that list updated on the website as well under the Give tab.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So when they go and they click these things on the Amazon website, they just automatically get sent to you? They don't have to do anything else? It's super easy?
It's super easy.
Great. That sounds like a kind of a fun way to contribute to the shelter.
Yeah, and there's also, we have little coin banks. It's called Cash for Critters at businesses throughout the community, such as Virginia National Bank, Three Notch, Natural Pet Essentials, Tip Top. So you see our coin banks all over, and that helps us too. It adds up.
Sure. You mentioned briefly the rummage store. It's not far from our studios here.
No, it's not. It's on Hillsdale Drive.
In the Seminole Square. Tell me about the rummage store. What's there? What can people buy? Is it manned by staff, volunteers?
It's manned by both staff and volunteers. And it's opened 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday. It's 10 to 6, and on Sunday, 12 to 5. We take donations at all times that we're opened. And this is another example. We couldn't do this without our volunteers. They really provide a major service to us by collecting the items there to work during the days. And you can find most anything. In fact, sometimes it's too expensive for me to shop there. We have some really amazing items that come through. Recently, we had diamond earrings donated. So it's not just all, you know, inexpensive.
Rummage.
It's not all just rummage. Very good, very good word there, Tara. You can find all sorts of things, but obviously you can find nice discounted items.
Right. And do you have any animals over there?
We do have a room that's designated for cats, and we are hoping to recruit enough volunteers to move cats back over there very soon.
Right.
They have to help us take care of them. We have to make sure the cats are well cared for.
Right. Now, the big event of the year is coming up, the big fundraising event. The Critter Ball. Tell us all about it.
So it's going to be on September the 27th, which is a Thursday, at Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards. We're really excited about it. The money raised is typically about 10% of our annual operating budget, so it's a very important event for us. And we'll have our caravan out there with adoptable pets.
Wow. And so where is it again?
It's at Pippin Hill Farm and Vineyards.
And where's that?
It's down 29 South.
Okay. And
not too far.
And if someone wants to attend,
We are nearly sold out. I think we may have two seats left now.
Oh, great.
You know,
fantastic.
By all means, reach out. The contact person is Chelsea Mitchell at our shelter.
And how many seats?
200.
200 people.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yes.
That's going to be quite a night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
And when is it again? What's the date?
Thursday, September the 27th.
All right.
At 6 p.m.
So it's coming up pretty soon.
Yes, very soon.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about volunteers, particularly adult volunteers. I understand that kids can get involved in
absolutely. We're actually
stuff, but
yeah, even for the volunteer program, we are revamping our junior volunteer program well. It hasn't happened yet, but we are going to, so they have more options for volunteering.
All right, let's talk about the junior volunteers a little bit, and then we'll move on to the adult volunteers. Angie's making faces at me from across the table.
We're trying to. We want to revamp this so that they're able to work with animals more. Right now, it's mainly cleaning that they do and various services, but I would like to see them more engaged with animals, and we are working through that right now.
Okay, adult volunteers then.
Oh, gosh.
You've got...
We couldn't make it without them.
Your website says you have 594 adult volunteers. I suppose that number is growing all the time. We have two of them right here sitting at
the
table.
That doesn't even include our foster number either. That's nearly 500.
Right. So. Steve and Tara, how many hours a week do you put in at the shelter?
I put in generally between 15 to 18 hours a week.
Right. Tara?
I'm there Friday afternoons and most Saturday afternoons, so maybe 10.
And how many hours altogether have you each put in since you started volunteering at the shelter?
I have no idea. A lot.
I don't know what my total is, but I generally get in somewhere around 700 hours per year.
Okay, so now to be an adult volunteer, you have to be over 18. Is that right, Angie?
That is correct.
All right. So let's say our listener wants to become a volunteer with the shelter. How do they get started?
So they'll go on our website, fill out an application, and then attend a volunteer training. And all of that is clearly laid out on the website for the offerings of the volunteer training. If it's a situation where the volunteer can't make a training, then our volunteer coordinator will work with that person to try to get them in.
Okay. Tara and Steve, do you still remember your training? You've put in a lot of hours since then. Talk a little bit about the training process.
I attended the orientation session,
right,
and worked with the volunteer coordinator at that time. Then I had the good fortune to meet up with basically a person who mentored me. She was and is a volunteer, a CAT volunteer who had preceded me there. And one of the nice things that we are now doing is that we're doing this for everyone. We have shadows. We basically act as shadows. So once a person has gone through the orientation session and say they want to work with cats, then the volunteer coordinator will pair that person off with an experienced CAT socializer, and we will work with that person to basically introduce them to all that goes on in the care of cats and interacting with the public to get cats adopted.
Right. And Tara, how does it work on the dog side?
Well, back when I started 8 years ago, there was no volunteer coordinator. We were between people. And so a lot's changed. We've been through a lot of different staff since then. But I did also have an informal mentor that sort of guided me through the ins and outs and helped me figure out the best way to help. And so we formalized that now, and on the dog side, there is mentoring and shadowing as well.
So how long does it take to become a CAT socializer, or how long does that whole process take for a new volunteer to be, so they can start working with the dogs or cats? Rough guess.
I believe after the orientation, you shadow other volunteers, maybe one or two sessions, more if you like, and you can dig right in, and there's always staff and other volunteers around to help you.
Right.
So you're never alone.
It's really after that orientation, it's immediate. I mean, we really want to prevent, we want to remove as many obstacles as possible so folks can get in and volunteer.
And it sounds like, listening to Steve and Tara, it's satisfying work. Am I right?
Definitely.
Am I?
Absolutely. It's very relaxing to go in and sit with a purring cat on your lap for 15, 20 minutes.
Well, that's great.
And I do always make time for a little cat time after my dog walking. So
great.
Nothing like a purring cat, for sure.
CASPCA Executive Director, Angie Gunter here, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns. We're talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. You are listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Coming to the part that I'm hoping is going to be the most fun, I wanted to hear some of your happy stories from Tara and Steve of animals you worked with, socialized them, and made them adoptable. Who wants to go first? Oh, Steve does.
I'd be glad to. Mine is a very personal story. I'm going to tell you the story of Stenny. Stenny was a little gray and white cat who arrived at the shelter in August of 2014. He was terrified, and he had health issues. So he didn't become available for adoption until October of that year, basically almost 2.5 months later. When I met him, he would not let me touch him. He was hiding. He constantly hid. And he was so frightened that we were unable to put him out on what we call the cat rows. And we have two areas, two rooms. We call it the large and the small catio. So we put Stenny in the large catio. And I would walk in there, and I literally had to search the room in order to find him. I tried to work with him for six months and made very little progress. So in April of 2015, it was decided that Stenny should go to a foster home, in the hopes that just changing his environment and having him with a loving family would make a difference. He was there for 7 months, coming back in November, and unfortunately, he didn't improve very much. So he was put back in that large catio, and I heard staff talking about, well, maybe we ought to make this cat a barn cat. I didn't think that he qualified as a barn cat. I thought he was just terrified.
What's a barn cat?
A barn cat is basically a working cat that is going to live in some a building, and is basically there for rodent control.
Right.
Many people have barn cats that they love dearly, but oftentimes these are just basically worker cats that are there strictly for rodent control.
Right. So you thought you might have to convert him to a barn cat.
And as I say, by that time, of course, I had become attached to him.
Sure, sure.
And I resisted this a little bit. And I continued to work with him. And I finally talked the animal care folks into moving him from this catio to a window cage. We call them window cages. It's about a 6 by 3 foot floor plan. We have 4 window cages at the shelter, and we put Stenny in one of these window cages so that I didn't have to search for him every time I went in looking for him.
Sure.
I would crawl into the cage, literally sit in the cage with him. Again, he continued to hide, but I continued to work with him there, and on a Friday, I still remember this, it was a Friday, I'm sitting there with him, he's under his blanket, I'm petting him, and lo and behold, I hear him purring.
Wow.
I was ecstatic, and I continued to work with him for another 2 weeks, and I then brought him home. So he came to my house. I renamed him Skimbleshanks because of he's the railway cat, the cat on the railway train from the musical Cats. One of the things that we counsel all cat adopters is do not bring a new cat and give it the entire run of your house. This can overwhelm a cat. We recommend that a new cat be placed in a safe room, which is what I did with Skimble. Basically, it was a spare bedroom that I had that I outfitted with food and water and litter box and bedding and toys. And I went in there at least 4 times a day to sit with him, to gain his trust. And I gradually got him to do that. Now, most cats that go home stay in their safe room for 2 or 3 or 4 days. And at that point, they're ready to come out and explore. And they are usually pretty persistent about this. And this is great. My Skimble stayed in his safe room for 3 months.
Wow.
It took me that long to gain his trust, but I finally did. And once he was comfortable with me, it was time to introduce him to the other 2 felines that I had in my house at that time. It was interesting to see the pecking order that developed. Skimble was subservient to my then 15-year-old cat, Izzy, but he decided that Inara, who was my 8-year-old girl, was really a fun cat to chase. And Inara basically said, okay, I don't like this game. And Inara would simply jump up on the nearest high elevation, and Skimble was done. He's never been aggressive with her, but to this day, this pecking order of Izzy, Skimble, and Inara persists in my household. He now trusts me completely. But he still is just beginning to trust other humans. Most of the time, if the doorbell rings, he's gone. And I know where he hides. But very recently, my son, who lives in Washington, when he comes to visit, Skimble has started making friends with him. So I just love this little guy, and I am so glad that he is living with me and with my other cats and is not living in a barn someplace.
Wow, that's a great story. Tara?
My favorite story is very recent. Her name is Sydney, and she was a little dog that we had in the back in the old style kennels, and she was very reactive, just barking, barking, barking when you went by her kennel. And it was obvious that she was scared. She wasn't, in the past, this might have been read as aggressive, and you could call it that, but it's because she was scared. And so I'm really proud of us that these days we go to the source, and we're trying to resolve and really care for the problems that these animals are having. And
the behavior that they're exhibiting is really informative, and we can take that and help resolve their issues. And so she was scared, and she was barking, and she was so nervous we had to just toss food by as we went by.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
She was, it was a little bit overwhelming if you just walked by. She was that, don't get near me. So we did this for a while, and eventually she started seeing that she could trust us. And one day she took food from my hand. And then one day she jumped up on me when someone else was walking her. And eventually she just decided that, you know, this person's okay, that person's okay, and she extended it to a whole bunch more people. But she was still a little bit reactive with strangers. So we kept her in the back because she didn't show well, because she would still be reactive to strangers. But those of us who knew us knew that she was just a sweetheart. And it turned out she was really great with the other dogs. She was a rock star in the playgroups. And so I met this woman, came in, and she had adopted from us 4 years ago, a dog named Mila. And she was looking for a friend for her dog, Mila. And her boyfriend had recently adopted from us a dog named Rocco. And so she tried a male dog for her female Mila. It went okay, but it wasn't a love connection. And we tried another one. That went better, but, you know, thought, well, maybe this isn't the day. So I went off, and I was walking Sydney next. And so I walked by, and I said, you know what? Why don't you try Sydney? Sydney likes everyone. I know she wasn't exactly what you're looking for, but let's give it a shot. And wow, it was that was a love connection. That was everybody was the dogs got along great. They just really connected. And our sweet little reactive Sydney went and just put her head in the boyfriend's lap. Wow. I mean, she loved those people. So it was obvious that's where she belonged. And it turns out that the dog that the boyfriend had adopted, Rocco, now named Taco, was a playmate of hers when they were in playgroups. So they were reunited. They're a great trio of players now. And Sydney, now Mabel, has a fantastic home because we took the time to get to know her.
Wow, another great story. Speaking of success stories and happy animal stories, the shelter could get $100,000 for one of them, right?
That is correct.
Let's talk about the Petco Foundation contest.
That is correct.
There's still some time?
Yeah, so for the Petco Foundation grant, well, the stories are due in October 1st. So pet owners from across the country submit their stories about how their adopted pet changed their lives. And we have the chance, the CASPCA has a chance to win some really big bucks. They're giving out, I think it's a total of $100,000 worth of grants. So we're asking people who've adopted animals from us to submit a story to the Petco Foundation. And if their story is chosen, we will be one of the lucky participants and winners of a $100,000 grant. And then the adopter can also win a Petco gift card. So we're really encouraging people to send in stories, and they're only going to read the first 10,000. So it's important to get them in as soon as you can. I know we've had quite a few come in. So
do you think you could use $100,000?
Oh, my gosh. Uh-huh. Yes. We can use $100,000. We can use $1,000. We can always use donations.
So is there a link to the Petco?
It's on our website. So visit our website and go to that link, and it'll take you right there.
All right. We're out of time. It's been so much fun. Let's just quickly review the URL for your website. If people want to find out more, if they want to volunteer, if they want to help you win that $100,000.
Yeah, it's CASPCA.org.
That's great. Angie, Steve, Tara, thanks so much for stopping by and talking with us.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
It's been fun.
Thank you.
CASPCA Executive Director Angie Gunter, along with volunteers Tara Wood and Steve Stearns, were in our studio this morning. We've been talking about the Charlottesville Albemarle SPCA. And this and every episode of The Wake Up Call is available on demand at SeavillePodcast.com. Coming up at noon on 94.7 WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. For The Wake Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC. We'll be right back.